Oh, hey gang, Kevin Strange here.
Jeremy Daniels.
And we're here to talk about April's Patreon bullshit. Right now, you can get Cotton Candy in full, my infamous weird sex novella in full right now at Patreon for only $1 ad-free in its entirety, an hour and a half long audiobook right now.
Of gangbang sweetness.
Of gangbang sweetness. You can also get Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik in full, commercial free. Make humans. Jorek and the Shaugus Steel.
Humans Under the Bed.
And you can get Humans Under the Bed. All right now. For $1. You can listen. You can literally pay $1 and download all of those audiobooks to your hard drive. For just $1 on patreon.com/KevinTheStrange. Gang, get on that shit.
Boop. Hey, Kevin. What do you want to do about this podcast intro?
For Reading to Strangers?
Yeah.
I always think we'd download this broody-ass music, like, blah, 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 and then you'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. I'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. Then I shoot myself in the head. Pow!
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song.
Like, with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit?
Yeah, but like, reading to strangers.
Reading to strangers. Reading to strangers. No, that's a terrible idea. Oh, well, hello, strangers.
Hello there.
Welcome to another episode of Reading Strangers. Episode
14?
15.
15.
Last week was 14. Don't take one away.
10 minutes ago.
Don't take them away from you. 10 minutes ago last week.
Episode 15.
Yeah. Almost there. Five more episodes.
Yeah. We hit 12. Special edition episodes.
Five more episodes. We hit episode 20. Gang, some of you know what that means. The milestone. Episode 20 is where we stopped Reading to Monsters. We will not stop Reading to Strangers.
Oh, no. We're after next weekend, we're full tilt for at least 20 episodes.
Right there. I hope so. Next week, we start recording Computer Face.
Y'all.
Here's the thing about Computer Face. I'm not going to do the origin of Computer Face until we actually air it, but I love this story. You haven't read this story. This story is one of my most inventive, one of my weirdest. It involves these fucking torture robots that take over the planet, not through efficiency, but through sheer brutality, and they use human insanity as their battery power. So they actually stick humans inside of their bodies and torture them to pull insanity out of their brains and run their bodies on human insanity.
I thought it was fear.
Fear and, yeah, fear is fuel. Fear and insanity, it's all one big package. And I think it's fucking cool. It ties into my McHumans universe.
You mentioned that.
I just think it's fucking badass, and when we go to shows, nobody blinks at it. Nobody, and it's got a cool-ass cover. It's like a broken iPod with a skull on it. It says Computer Face on it. I'm not sure why this doesn't connect with fans, but after the last show, after the last convention, Horror Hound, I told you, like, we're going to do this as the next podcast book because I want to put this book in people's faces. I want people to experience Harry and the saga of Computer... Harry's the main character, and the saga of Computer Face, and how it ties in, because we already did McHumans on the podcast. I want it to tie in to McHumans. In the next couple of years, I'm going to be writing McHumans 2, which is directly tied into Computer Face and the machine world. There's... McHumans exists in the Cthulhu, Lovecraftian mythos world, and Computer Face takes place in the machine world, the dystopian post-apocalyptic world ruled by torture machines. And so this thing can all tie together, like with a neat little bow on top, Jeremy Daniels.
Yup.
And I'm going to force it down people's throats.
Well, I mean, it's a cool concept, and I think the main issue may be the back of the book. Everybody at the table
flips it over and it just says fear is fuel.
Fear is fuel, and everything else has a little bit more of a draw on them.
Should I put a synopsis back there? Should I redo the back? I think it looks cool.
I mean, if you were going to do something to try to push it, I think a little bit more on the bimid. You could still go 3/4 fear as fuel, but a little bit, I think, would entice him, because a lot of the people I was having, you know, sales that I didn't expect read the back of the book, and as soon as they read the back of the book, we're like, yeah, this is what I'm taking.
Okay. Well, I will take that criticism, and I will
not use criticism. It. I think people like to have something they can quickly read through, a little synopsis. How many people do you see turn over a book?
All of
them. Yeah. So
I will use that constructively, and I'll put together a back cover synopsis for that book, and we'll see, because I believe we only have 1 or 2 copies left anyway. So I'll redesign the cover before I order copies for the Crypticon Kansas City.
So at Crypticon, will be special editions, 2 left of the old back.
Yeah, you can sell them that way.
Yeah.
You know what else you're going to be selling at Crypticon Kansas
City? Gay Jesus.
Here's the thing. When I did those little mini chat books, what I did was I have the full size 5.5 by 8.5 trade paperbacks of all the books, and I decided to do little 4x6 mini digest sized chat books.
Small sexy singles.
Yeah, small sexy singles. Little bite sized books you can read in under an hour, sometimes in a half an hour. And there were people that would sit at the table and flip through one of the digests and read the whole thing in 15, 20 minutes. The idea was to create those little bite size. You're just $5, boom, little five, like a
little taste.
Like a double cheeseburger, man. Here's a little double cheeseburger taste of fucking Kevin Strange. And the idea was I was going to do them in waves, because I've got so many. I know some authors have 1,000 fucking short stories published. I have somewhere around the neighborhood of 30 short stories published. Every single one of my short stories could be a little chappy. So my goal was to create really cheap covers, very inexpensive covers, and just start doing waves. And the first wave is what we had for sale at Horror Hound Cincinnati. And my idea behind it was I ordered just a few copies of each, and after they were done, after they were sold out, I wasn't going to order any more, and that wave would be out of print. And then I would do 4 more short stories with inexpensive covers and buy a few copies each of those. And when that wave was done, because you can get all these stories in the larger short story collections. So it's not like... And I also had ideas where, like, maybe 3 of them are from the collections and 1 is brand new, a brand new short story that's never been released. That's where the Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of It came from. But then I had so much fun writing these Jorek stories, I started writing, no, it's going to be a whole collection all by itself. So we sold out of Gay Jesus.
Yes.
And we're damn near sold out of Loch Ness Lay. And so my original idea was to not reorder those. Just let them be out of print. But you sold so many Gay Jesus books.
Yeah.
Holy Matrimony.
Yeah.
You sold so many of those books.
Gay Jesus Erotica.
People were so into it.
Well, I mean, the look on their faces, as soon as they said, you know, everything from this to Gay Jesus Erotica, they would look down at it. And I was just amazed that everybody really wanted it.
It sold so well, was such a crowd pleaser and a draw over to the table, that I ended up ordering more copies of it. I ended up restocking us up for Crypticon to make sure that Jeremy had
some gay Jesus to
sell. So
I mean, it may be because I'm an ordained minister. Maybe that's why I can sell Gay Jesus.
You gotta
so much.
You gotta use that hook. I'm an ordained minister, and here's Gay Jesus.
And the Lord said, "This is what a hand job would be."
I started work on a very ambitious project this week. Also, I want to put together my very first hardcover limited edition. And this is my idea for it. I want to release every single Lovecraftian novel, novella, and short story that I've ever written in 1 300-400 page hardcover, large, I'm talking 12 inches by 8 inches or something, hardcover limited edition book, that will have... So my straight Lovecraftian stuff. Last Gig on Planet Earth. McHumans. Gay Jesus is a Lovecraftian book.
Is it?
Yeah, it turns out to be... who is it? Yog-Sothoth, I think, is who Gay Jesus is masquerading. Spoiler alert. Gay Jesus is actually Yog-Sothoth masquerading as Jesus, raping the soul of the... or not rape. It's not rape at all. It's very consensual. Copulating with the soul of the dying man. But the dying man turns out to not be a man at all either. Spoiler alert. Maybe we should record Gay Jesus for the podcast.
I think we will. And sometime. We need to get a bigger book done just to get a bigger book done, but...
Maybe. After we record Computer Face, let's do Gay Jesus next.
Yeah, maybe it could go during Computer Face as a Patreon special, and then maybe some other time on the regular one.
Maybe. But what was I getting at? So there's other... Inside an Asshole is a story about Azathoth, the Lovecraftian entity, and the Necronomicon. There's a lot of different Necronomicons. The character Richie G from Inside an Asshole, he's collecting all the different Necronomicons he can find throughout the world, and they're all missing this one particular page. So he's trying to recreate that page using the flesh and blood of girls that he kidnaps. That's the sort of overview synopsis of Inside an Asshole. Mm-hmm. So that'll be in there too. And then I want to write one brand new novella, Lovecraftian, out the ass. And so it'll be a hardcover collection of all my Lovecraftian work, plus a brand new, never-before-released novella. So I'm talking this thing's going to be probably 300 to 400 pages long. And I want to call it Kevin Strange's Lovecraft Pages.
You don't want to go with the Strange Necronomicon?
No. Kevin Strange's Lovecraft Pages. Something along those lines. Whatever.
Cool.
Whatever it ends up being. But this is going to be a hardcore collector's item. I'm talking less than 50 of these things will be created, and they will be somewhere along the lines of $175 to $220 to buy. These are going to be expensive collector's edition hardcovers. And I've never even... attempted anything like that before. So I'm excited. I don't know if anybody cares about a Kevin Strange hardcover collection or collector's edition. Yeah. But
those wouldn't be things that we're trying to sell a lot of anyway. It would be for the big
thing. Very limited. Very limited edition. And my goal is to do one hardcover limited edition every year. So then I want to do one that's just a hardcover limited edition of Texas Chainsaw Mantis. A hardcover limited edition of I Died in a Bed of Roses. Stuff like that. Like the actual novel length stuff that are just hardcover. And we'll have to get different cover art. So the brand new exclusive cover art for a hardcover collector's edition. You know, maybe try to get a writer that doesn't hate me to do a brand new introduction for that stuff, but what do you think of that? What do you think of...
I mean, that could work.
Expensive, super limited hardcovers.
I mean, that could work. I know there would be some people that would buy it. Definitely.
I'm thinking of some hardcore fans.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Lovecraftian thing where you have a bunch of different stories, so... You know, maybe... I think it'd probably work out better. Like, maybe Vampire Guts, once you're done with it, would definitely be, you know, the trilogy in one book would...
Yeah, but I want to do the individuals, too. Vampire Guts would be another one. I want to do a brand new cover, hardcover edition.
Trouble making an 8x11 or whatever those dimensions you threw out.
12x8 or something big. 300 Well, the page. Lovecraftian one is the one I want to be real big. Mm-hmm. The other ones can be regular 8.5x5.5, or 5.5x8.5, but hardcover with...
Oh yeah, a brand the smaller new one. Ones. Yeah,
they'll be so it'll be the exact same size as they are now.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, because if it's real big, it'll be really thin. It'll be like a children's book.
Yeah, size. I was gonna say I don't know if people would want to shell out for a little thinity.
Right,
but
yeah, those hardcovers are. I've already looked into. I've already looked at the production cost, the quality of the printing, the pages, everything, and they work in various sizes. It's not just one size I can get. So, because I'm just trying to diversify. Everything I have is fucking 5.5 by 8.5 paperback. Yeah. I diversified a little bit by getting the matte cover, the little velvety feeling covers instead of the glossy covers. Mm-hmm. But that to me, it's still like everything is uniform. It's the same. So going to the little chappies and then. And then doing something like a hardcover limited edition, just to spice it up. There's people out there that will collect those things. And when I'm dead, those things are actually going to be worth money because they're going to be rare.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to be, you know, you manufacture them through print on demand companies, but all you have to do is click delete, and it's no, you know, and for instance, Inside an Asshole, the paperback version was limited to 50 signed and numbered copies. That's not available online. You can't buy that from Amazon. You could only buy that from me directly or at conventions, limited to 50, signed and numbered, and it will never be reprinted in that form ever again. Yeah. So those are going to be collector's items in time.
Yeah, you'll because, have to buy the big book just yeah, to read it.
Yeah, you'll have to buy the big fucking collector's edition just to... Or actually, it's in Murder Stories.
Oh, okay.
It's the last novella in Murder Stories. But as far as it being by itself with that cover... It's very limited. Only 50 copies of that book exist in that form. And it's got its own, I believe, yeah, it's got its own introduction. So, you know, there's limited limited edition Kevin Strange out there. So, I believe with that said, we can, you have anything you want to add for this?
No, well, we can talk afterwards. So,
we are going to get right in to Cotton Candy, Part 2, Mr. Pillinghast. Is figured out and gangbangs is his cup of tea. Now yeah. Let's talk about that for we got a couple minutes.
Okay.
We got a couple minutes. You ever been in a gangbang, Jeremy Daniels?
Not what would be classified as gangbang.
What do you classify as a gangbang?
Usually going for a high number and more, not I mean I've been in group sex, but not
what's a high number?
I'd say more than you know, six.
More than six, he says. More than six from what?
It could vary.
Because you can do reverse gangbangs. It could be six women on one guy.
Yeah.
Or six guys on one girl. But it's just classified as an orgy if there's a mix.
Yes. Yes. It does have to be one against the rest.
A gangbang is one against the rest. Is the... what's his name? Leonidas. Against Xerxes. The army of 300 versus a million Persian forces. Except penises in one vagina, or a bunch of vaginas in one penis.
But yeah, those
you've never been in a
no, I've never.
Honest to God, gangbang.
No,
what is the what's the highest number of? If you're comfortable speaking about your, I haven't asked you yet.
Five.
How rude of me, Jeremy Daniels. Are you comfortable? Are you comfortable talking about your private sex life on the air?
Yeah. No
five. What?
Yeah, no, sure. Two guys, three girls.
Two guys and three girls. That's cool. That's hot. That's nice. I have only done three at a time. So me and two girls, or me and a friend and one girl. So male, female.
I like how you didn't say male.
Male, friend. Male, female, or female, male. And I know, Jeremy Daniels, that you would expect that I would have had more male, female threesomes.
Or at least one male.
Never had a male either. But in my life, the majority of threesomes that I've had, no gangbangs and no group sex either, but the majority of threesomes that I've had have been male.
Yeah, same.
However, I would say that I don't know how your experience has played out, but it seemed like almost every time I would have a threesome with two girls, there would inevitably be some kind of jealousy and some kind of drama that would come out of that. My girlfriend, it would always end up being my girl, except for the first one. The first one was girlfriends to a couple that wanted to sleep with me. And that one was fine. There was no drama involved. But all the rest of them were me and a girl I was dating, and we brought in another girl. Whether that girl be her friend or my friend or a stranger, the girl, and these were different. I had different girlfriends. This happened over different girlfriends. But inevitably, the girlfriend would end up jealous of something that happened. And it was never during. The sex was always great. it would be, I would catch hell for it a day or a week later, and it would always blow up into this big fucking thing. Did you ever experience that?
Nope.
You never had to deal with that?
Nope. There's tips I give people that can ease that, but I guess
never. Tips like never let them engage,
the girl picks, first of all. Yeah. You don't care, and you cannot care under any circumstances.
You have no opinion on the matter of which partner it's going
to
be?
No. You usually have to follow the instructions of the one you're with and give her what she expects out of it, and don't cross a line.
I think I jumped all over those fucking lines and stomped on them. I was always me going, "No, bitch, do this.
I mean, you can still do it. What I'm saying is, like,
I'm a very controlling sexual partner. I'm a very dominant sexual partner.
So am I generally.
I'm a film director. So I get two bitches naked in a room together. For sure I'm going to be like, you lick her butthole.
No.
All right, now switch.
See, I mean, I can do that, but I can also, you know, be a passenger as well.
I've always heard that. I've always heard that the best way for a guy to smoothly get through that experience, drama-free, friction-free, is to just let it be. Let whatever's going to happen. Let the girls decide. Let them have fun. And you just get to... It's you as a bonus, get to participate in this. I'm just not that kind of sexual partner. That's just not how I am.
You can still be dominant and still, you know, let them be in control of certain aspects that prevent issues. That is not a thing that I've experienced, because it's just easier. I mean, you don't have to always... To be the alpha, you don't always have to be the one barking. So
I gotta do it. I gotta bark. I gotta be the one.
Sometimes the alpha could just sit back and, you know, the betas know what the alpha wants. And
I can't do it.
And then it's like a couple of guys growing up that I've talked to that's been in that same situation. Sometimes jealousy's on their end.
I've heard that before, and all I can think of is, you're a bitch ass motherfucker. Exactly. You're gonna get jealous of your girlfriend eating some fucking other girl out.
A sandwich, get drink. Well, they just ignored me for a little bit. Eventually they'll want something.
First of all, okay, stand there and watch.
That's what I'm saying. Why would you not just sit there and enjoy it? Get a sandwich and drink. Chill out.
That's less work you have
to do. They didn't even know I was in there for a half hour. Good. So that was what seems like successful.
That's less work that you have to do.
Eventually you're going to be like, there's something we're missing. Oh, yeah, it's dead.
Now, I never had any drama when it was male, male, female. And most of those were another couple inviting me into their bedroom. And in those instances, I wouldn't be dominant. So it's like, if there's already the alpha in the room and he's inviting me to join, I just take whatever he gives me.
See, I've never been in that one.
Never done that?
No, it was always me and a friend and somebody that was their fantasy and just happened to be, you know. We knew the rules, no eye contact, can't just sit there and stare lingeringly in each other's eyes.
I remember the first time I did that, my friend invited me to sleep with his wife, and we're drunk, and stupid me, the first thing I do is go in and try to kiss her, and they're like, whoa, what are you doing, man? But it wasn't drama or anything, it was just like me going like, oh, I'm not supposed to do that? And they'd be like, no, just fuck her, man. And I'm like, oh, well, that's a little more, to me, that's a little more intimate, but it turns out that... In the rules of the
you gotta understand the rules before you go in. I mean,
right. And though that couple and I had a lot of those experiences together, and it was never an issue. It was just in that moment, it was funny because they were like, "The first thing I do is break rule number one."
Didn't know rule number one was rule number one. It's hard to break it.
All right, so that's cool. That's a nice little. So no gangbangs on either on either end here. So unfortunately for gangbang month, neither Jeremy nor I have any gangbang stories for you, gang.
But we're willing to do the female on male that you don't ever hear about. I mean, geez.
Oh, that's the other story I was going to tell. There was one instance, one perfect storm in my life where I was sleeping with a bunch of different girls. And it was this perfect storm. It was a 6-month period where I was sleeping with... All the girls I was sleeping with were all bisexual, and none of them were in relationships. And I had this moment, and I was having a threesome with two of the girls. And I had this moment where the clouds parted and Jesus himself looked down on me and went, "Why don't you fuck them all at the same time?" And I was like, "Would you girls," to the two girls I was sleeping with, "would you girls be okay with two more coming over and us having a five-way?" And they both said yes. They were. Are they hot? Are you talking about? Are they bitches? Are they dirty? Are they? No. They're fucking sweet little blonde girls, just like you guys are. And they were like, "Oh yeah, well we're down then." Called up the other girls. Every single girl was down to do it, but I couldn't ever set it up. I couldn't schedule. I lost it in the scheduling, Jeremy. Jeez. Daniels. I lost a fivesome in the scheduling.
I could not get them all. I hope it wasn't your schedule that interfered, because all of a sudden your books should have been clear.
Fuck no.
Color work. This is what happened.
You know how girls are, especially we're all in our 20s at the time. All hard partiers in our 20s. I couldn't. They were all flaky. I'd say, "Can we all come over on Friday night?" "Yeah, okay." And then one would cancel. Two. I'd end up only fucking one of them on Friday. The next Friday would come around. "Okay, everybody come over." And then it would be a different one. Everybody would cancel, but a different one. And it was like, I never could. And then it all...
Try another day besides Friday?
You know what I mean. Whatever we set up, it would always fall apart and they would all flake except for one. And then as these things happen, they would end up in relationships and we drifted apart and it all went away. There was this perfect storm where...
That's why you wrote the Gay Jesus book. You're mad at him because he came down the clouds, gave you this wonderful idea, your poor execution.
Kevin Strange, why don't you fuck them all at the same time?
And then you didn't, so he's all peasy at you.
People don't... people listening to this, they're going to think... They look at me, they see the 37-year-old receding hairline... big fat guy. I didn't look like this in my 20s. I was a pretty good looking fit guy in my 20s, and I pulled the trim pretty quick and effortlessly is how I used to say it. My friends would be like, "How do you fuck such hot bitches, man?" I'm like, "Listen, bro, you just gotta know how to..." I lifted a lot of weights.
I did a lot of sit-ups. Collegiate crust.
Yeah, I did a lot of sit-ups, and then I did a lot of bench presses, and I was just very confident. It was all about confidence, and I had a party pad, and having a party pad in your 20s is really... And being single. I'm single with a party pad, and I do a lot of push-ups and fucking pull-ups, and you know, I was physically a decent-looking fella. With a party pad that anybody could come to at any time, day or night. And I worked at a porn shop. I was a fucking porn shop guy. So a lot of times I would have the girls meet me at a porn shop and I'd buy them a toy. And we'd go back to my house and try out the toy. I mean, it was just really easy. It was effortless back then. Way harder now. Well, I wonder why. Because I'm 30 fucking 7. I'm fat as fuck. I need to do some fucking sit-ups, Jeremy Daniels.
Yeah, same here.
All right. We're way over on time. So our second segment's going to be real short this week. But we're going to... Didn't I say this already? We're going to get in to Cotton Candy.
Oh, by the way.
Part 2. Mr. Pillinghast has figured out...
He has the number.
That he has a proclivity towards gangbangs. He wants to participate in one. He finds a... In a porn shop, he finds a flyer for a gangbang against the better judgment of the porn shop clerk.
That's right.
He's going to call the number. And in part 2, we find out what happens. We'll see you on the other side, guy. What's up, you reader fucks? My name's Kevin Strange.
And this is Travis.
And we're here from the Watching with Strangers podcast, because there's other things in the world besides books, too, you bookish fucks. We review cult movies. What kind of cult movies do we review, Travis?
All kinds of cult movies.
Like what?
Cultists of the cult, including Cult for the Future.
Cult movies from the future at kevinthestrange.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever other podcasts fuck, you fucks. I phoned the number as soon as I got home, after waving to Mrs. Masters, who scowled at me disapprovingly from her garden sanctuary. There was no answer. I left my name and number on the voicemail, and then, much to my surprise, the phone rang back almost immediately. Hello?
Mr. Pillinghast?
Yes, that's me.
You called inquiring about the party?
Yes, I did, I said with no hesitation, my penis becoming engorged at the very thought of actually fulfilling my most perverted desire.
We have very difficult standards to meet, Mr. Pillinghast. Our parties are extremely exclusive.
Money is of no concern. I'll pay whatever.
No, Mr. Pillinghast. Our parties are free of charge. Our requirements for participation are much more specific.
I'll do anything, I said, my hands shaking. I had to be a part of this party. Had I been thinking rationally, I may have caught the blatant warning signs and red flags that the mysterious caller was showing. But I had tunnel vision, and rational thought rarely extends past a man's raging boner. I had to make this happen.
Meet me at Cutter Park at noon tomorrow.
He hung up before I could reply. I showed up at the park at 11:30, giddy and eager. At 12:05, I became nervous. At 12:45, I began to doubt the mystery man's intent to show for our meeting. At 1:15, as I put my jacket on to leave, a small, squattish little man exited a filthy, beat-up old RV in the parking lot next to my bench where I sat. The RV had been parked there when I arrived.
Mr. Pillinghast, I assume?
His voice was even weirder in person than on the phone, but that voice had nothing on the rest of his appearance. He resembled an overgrown frog. His eyes were huge, saucer-shaped things that jutted out of his oversized balding head. They had an odd sheen to them, almost plastic in appearance. His nose was a pathetic little turned-up knob, while his mouth was so wide-set it suggested an almost legitimate deformity. His arms and legs were short, barely protruding from a brown suit that was too tight at the waist and much too long in the sleeves. Yes, I was about to leave. You told me noon. Have you been here this whole time?
I had to test your commitment to our party,
he said, grinning.
So many men are eager to join in on the fun, but get cold feet at the last minute. I like to weed out the weak as soon as possible.
I see, I said, sitting back down on the bench. My strange companion joined me. As he spoke, I could not help but notice the odd smell Samuel had mentioned before, almost like cotton candy.
Are you married, Mr. Pillinghast?
No, well, widowed.
Condolences. Children?
No, we never had any children of our own.
Live alone?
Yes, but, I said, feeling slightly agitated by his line of questioning. What's any of that got to do with your party, as you keep calling it? I am interested in joining your group sex session. My personal life is irrelevant. I assure you, if discretion is your concern, I have not told anyone of my plans to attend the event and would not consider telling anyone. Your secret is safe with me. I hadn't, after all, actually told Samuel I was going to meet with him, so I wasn't technically lying. The little man smirked, unfazed by my sudden burst of anger.
We operate in a very specific way, Mr. Pillinghast. I assure you, our discretionary tactics are in place for a reason. Please relax. If, however, you feel uncomfortable with my invasive questions, we can always end this interview now.
He made a move to leave. No, no, I'm sorry. I live alone and unmarried and have no dependents. I don't even so much as own a dog that will miss me while I'm gone. I am very interested in joining your group. What other information can I provide you with?
I will need a current negative test for sexually transmitted diseases and a record of your criminal history. When you've obtained these items, send them to this address and await further instructions.
He handed me a slip of paper with a P.O. box number. With that, he stood. Wait, I don't understand. If this isn't about money, why all the secrecy? What are you hiding from?
The young lady that employs me is not in need of any money. Her father is a wealthy and very prominent politician, so you can understand our need for discretion. He provides her with a lavish lifestyle, and in return, she makes sure that her activities do not show her family name in an unfavorable light in the public eye.
Oh, I said, realizing that I hadn't, up to that point, given any consideration to the woman with whom I'd be sharing the encounter with. I see.
Mail the items to the P.O. box, Mr. Pilling asked. I'll be in touch.
I did as requested. Samuel, upon hearing of the meeting, protested strongly against my participation, expressing regret at ever showing me the flyer in the first place. I paid no mind. I was a man possessed by the beast. Instead, I waited in anticipation for a return phone call every day, always making sure to keep my phone near me during my regular masturbation sessions, which now consisted of exclusively gangbang porn, as I fantasized about defiling this prominent young aristocrat along with half a dozen other smiling, happy cocks. After days of agonizing waiting, thinking surely that I'd spooked the little man in our meeting, or that my requested data did not meet his stringent requirements, the phone call came. I was instructed to meet the stranger at the North City bus station at 10 p.m. the next night with one change of clothing and nothing more. I was also instructed once again to not inform anyone of my business with the party planner, as he called himself. I hung up the phone and whooped! Just before leaving for the station, I stood in my den and reflected over what my life had become. Used sex toys, covered in shit and cum, lay strewn across the room. Empty pizza boxes, fast food bags, and liquor bottles littered the floor and every surface. My office, the room in which I'd done so much work to shape and enrich young lives, had become a literal den of iniquity. I could not remember the man I'd been before Susanna had so abruptly left my life. But I knew for certain that I loved the man I'd become. I left my house that night entirely at peace with myself, full of confidence even, ready to have the best sexual experience of my life. Little did I know, it would be my last. As I sat in my car at the bus station, I looked at my phone, contemplating whether or not I should text Samuel to let him know I was going through with it. In the end, I decided to comply with the party planner's wishes. I told no one. At 10 p.m. exactly, my phone buzzed with a new text. It read, "Bathroom. Third stall." I exited my car and complied with the request. What I found was a set of directions and an address. It was really happening. My pulse quickened with excitement as I climbed back into my car, plugging the numbers into my GPS with childlike glee. The address in question was in a small town 50 miles south called Hops Hollow. I'd heard of the town and its nefarious reputation for being one of the most haunted small towns on Earth, but I'd never had a reason to visit. The residence itself, it turned out, was actually several miles outside of Hops proper, near the top of a wooded bluff overlooking the Mississippi River. Even with the help of my electronic navigator, it took me several attempts to find the nearly hidden, unmarked drive. The narrow path was overgrown with vegetation and dense trees that made travel, even in my small vehicle, a tad bit challenging. Several times as I crept along, I wondered if I'd chosen the correct road. However, after a dozen yards, the tree line opened up and I saw that I was indeed in the right place. The house itself was underwhelming, a centuries-old farmhouse that made up what it lacked in aesthetics with considerable size. It was a huge three-story structure, albeit severely dilapidated and in need of serious repair. The estate was quite large, considering. It had obviously been a farm compound at some point, maybe 150 years or more in the past. Now, it was an overgrown graveyard of rusted-out farming equipment and old cars and trucks. The crude rock road wound around to the front of the house, ending in a circle drive where several other vehicles, including the weird RV I'd seen at my meeting with the party planner, were already parked. I took a spot behind the other cars shortly after 11 p.m. Full night had set in along my journey, the long summer night giving way to a brooding darkness. I inhaled the country smells, cow manure, wild grass, and somewhere in the distance, the burning of leaves. The gothic surroundings set well with me. I felt right at home at this backwoods haunt. I felt right. It was really happening. I was really here. My palms were sweating from excitement. A knock at my window snapped me back out of my euphoric trance.
Hey, buddy, you here for the party?
I cracked my window a hair. Can I help you?
Yeah, no, I was just bored, waiting for this shit to start.
The man stared, unmoving. It was clear he had no intentions of walking away. I opened my door again and joined him in the vast front yard.
Name is Vern,
he said, extending his hand. I shook it. People call me Mr. P. Vern was a hair taller than me, just shy of 6'4". His head was shaved. He was very tan and wore a silver hoop earring in each ear, and one stud in the middle of his lower lip, in addition to a mustacheless goatee. He was small-framed but muscular, and wore a tight-fitting black tank top, revealing half-sleeve tattoos down to his elbows. In short, he looked like a rock and roll Mr. Clean.
You ever done one of these before, Mr. P?
No, I replied, reluctant to converse with my newfound friend. Much like I'd previously failed to consider the woman involved in my gangbang fantasy, I was now faced with the reality that my fellow bangers were not simply crudely drawn cocks with happy, smiling faces.
Oh man, you're in for a treat,
Vern said, slapping me on the back.
Come on, I'll introduce you to the rest of the boys. I've met everybody already.
I'd rather... But he was already off, quickly walking toward a small group of men gathered on the huge, screened-in front porch of the crumbling house. Awkwardly, I followed Vern. The screen door slammed, and we stepped inside. The porch was cluttered with knickknacks and old furniture. It looked as though nothing had been added to the little room in at least 30 years. I found that quite odd, considering the party planner himself looked to be no older than, at worst, late 40s. But then, I was making a huge assumption in thinking that this was his house. For all I knew, it belonged to one of the gangbangers. Still, it did not seem the kind of place one would find a kinky debutante with wealthy parents.
Mr. P, I'd like to introduce you to the gang,
Vern said, forcing my attention back to the business at hand.
Gang, this is Mr. P. He says he's never done a gangbang before. A noob.
We get to pop his cherry, a gigantic fat man said. He sat on what must have been a folding chair. I couldn't actually tell for sure because his obscene girth obscured the entire thing.
Well, that's Fat Bob,
Vern said. Fat Bob gave a slight wave. Two hugely muscled men stepped forward, each as ripped and defined as the other. They were obviously bodybuilders. They wore no shirts. Both had shaved chests with bulging pectoral muscles and perfectly shaped abdominals. The only thing, in fact, that set them apart from one another was that one had closely cropped blonde hair while the other kept his long and slick back in a ponytail.
I'm Kirk, the long-haired one said.
And I'm Bruce,
added the other.
I shook their hands. Pleasure to meet you fellows.
Oh, this is gonna be fun for you,
Kirk said.
Yeah, you lucked out,
Bruce chimed in with equal enthusiasm.
We're gonna show you big cum shots. Huge,
Kirk said.
We blow the biggest loads, don't we, Bruce?
Oh, yeah. We drink cum shakes 6 times a day in preparation for blowing our loads,
Bruce said. Cum shakes? I asked, puzzled.
An old family recipe,
Kirk said.
A secret family recipe,
Bruce added. So, you two are related? I asked.
Brothers,
Kirk said, clasping Bruce's meaty forearm.
Brothers in cum,
Bruce said.
Our dick blast will blow everybody else's out of the water. Yeah, because of our shakes and our all-natural diet, our sperm is thick. The thickest. And pure pearly white. Not that sickly yellow shit little weak men blow. And it smells organic and fresh, not like ammonia.
Ooh, fuck that. And it tastes awesome, too.
My brother's tastes like pineapple. His tastes like vanilla.
I couldn't remember who was Kirk and who was Bruce by now. You know what each other's cum tastes like? Yo, these niggas be on some straight-up homo shit.
The brothers come were pushed aside. Between them strode a tiny black man in an ill-fitting t-shirt and shorts that hung down to the tops of his shoes. He couldn't have been more than 4.5 feet tall. A black midget.
Yo, don't listen to them. Name's Dennis, but everybody calls me Big D. And not cause my name's Dennis, cause of this.
Before I could say a word, Big D dropped his shorts, revealing a thick cock that, once unleashed, hung all the way down to his feet. It had to be 14 inches. My mouth, it hung agape.
That's right,
Big D said, waggling his monster schlong at me.
Respect the dick.
It'd be more impressive if you could keep that big dick hard,
said the next person to join our growing group.
Man, fuck you, Maxwell. You ain't even got a dick.
You little shit. Maxwell made a move to attack Big D. The little man stood his ground, brandishing his enormous wang like a weapon. Vern jumped between the two.
Whoa, calm down, Maxwell.
Maxwell backed off, lighting a cigarette as he came over to stand next to me, away from Big D, who added a,
"That's right, bitch,"
as the last word before returning to where Fat Bob sat across the small porch. Pardon my asking, but do you two already know each other? I was under the impression that this was an anonymous party for random patrons.
Him?
Maxwell said, pulling another drag off his cigarette. Nah, not personally. Little fucker has a website for a while. Would fuck white chicks he found on the street with his huge dong. Problem is, he couldn't ever keep it up, and had a hell of a time getting off, so his cum shots had to be faked most of the time. People caught on pretty quick, and the site tanked. He's just pissed that I recognized him.
I see. So you learned of tonight's party from...
Same way you did, I'm guessing. Little pink flyer, smiling cocks on it.
I laughed. Yes, yes, smiling cocks.
The cocks sold me on it too, he said, winking at me.
What did he mean when he said you don't have a dick?
I'm transgendered, female to male, he said, puffing out his chest. I was just telling everyone about it when you walked in.
I could see that there was something slightly off about the curve and softness of Maxwell's jawline, the thickness of his short, cropped beard, the delicate structure of his hands. But then, I stammered, how do you
fuck?
He unbuttoned his jeans, reached in, and pulled out a fat 6-inch dick.
I don't understand, I said, puzzled. Maxwell yanked the dick out of his pants and handed it to me.
Appalled, I juggled it around for a moment before holding it away from my body by the tips of my fingers. The dick and even the balls on the thing looked totally real, complete with a small tuft of pubic hair above the penis. Indeed, all that gave the nasty thing away as an imitation were the straps hanging off either side and a reddish jelly dildo that jutted out from the opposite side.
Cadaver dick, Maxwell said.
Really comes, too. There's a piston in there that pushes semen out of the ball sack.
I handed it back to him after nearly dropping the whole bizarre contraption at the mention of the word cadaver.
Gentlemen,
the familiar voice of the party planner said from behind the group,
the hostess is ready to entertain her guests.
The creepy little man led us through the house into a sizable sitting room near the rear of the building. The inside looked considerably more kept than the dilapidated exterior, and yet still contained that puzzling, anachronistic air. All of the rugs, cabinets, and other furniture I saw as we were led through the house looked to be those that would have belonged to an elderly couple. There were rows and rows of cabinets filled with trinkets like ceramic angels and pewter cats. The floors were stacked high with bags of old newspapers and magazines. In fact, the house very much looked like that of dear Susanna's 89-year-old grandmother, still sharp as a tack. I did not have long to ruminate on such odd things, though, before we were ushered into the sitting room.
Your hostess will be with you in a moment,
the party planner said upon exit, closing the double doors behind him.
You ready to have some fun, Mr. P?
Vern asked, smacking me on the shoulder.
I am, I said, and then added, Vern, how many of these have you done, exactly?
In response, he yanked down his own pants, a motion I'd now come to expect from these people.
Recognize this?
His penis, roughly 8 inches, was tattooed from tip to root. His pubic area was entirely shaved, revealing a face, sort of demonic yet playful in nature. Its mouth was open. His penis formed its tongue. The tattoo which covered it represented as such. Additionally, the shaft and head of the penis was adorned with many piercings, both hoop and stud. It was an extreme sight, and one that would have shocked me had I not seen it dozens of times before. "Oh, oh," I exclaimed, "you're the dick!" Vern smiled large and proud.
"That's me."
The dick. Vern's dick, it turned out, was famous for being featured in all 37 installments of the I Gangbang series. "How did you end up here?" I asked.
"Well, I'm originally from Hops Hollow. I moved out to the valley to be an actor. Same old story, porn pays better and waiting tables. I figured tats and piercings would help me stand out from the normal crowd of big dicks. I was right. Made great cash in the 90s. Internet's killed porn, though. I couldn't find enough steady work, even with the old demon dick here. So I moved back home a couple years ago, saw the flyer at a bar, figured, fuck it. I'd do a little banging for old time's sake."
"How fascinating. Let me give you a little word of advice, newbie," Fat Bob said from his chair. He was still wheezing slightly from the walk inside.
"You're gonna freeze up in there. Bound to happen. There's a world of difference between watching a bitch take half a dozen cocks in a movie and actually being one of those cocks. Stage fright, you know?"
"I guess so," I replied.
"Well, the trick for me is learning how to get turned on by all those big dicks.
I ain't talking gay shit. I'm talking about training your mind to make your dick hard at the sight of other hard dicks.
As an exercise, I like to watch male masturbation videos while I jack off. It's like muscle memory. Now anytime I see a boner, my hand goes right for the pistol."
I was again speechless. Vern laughed at my inability to form a response, but then I didn't have to. The lady of the house had arrived. She backed her way in through the double doors. When she turned around, I nearly fell over into Fat Bob. She was simply stunning. Of all the hundreds, if not thousands, of porno movies I'd consumed in my second life, I'd never seen a woman with such beauty defiled on film. Not in foo-foo girl-girl lesbian movies, nor boring romantic couples movies, but especially not engaging in something so base and degrading as a gangbang. She was tall as Vern, maybe tall as me, and slight of figure. Almost too thin, but somehow she made it work. Her hair, what little of the natural stuff that was visible, was straight, fair, and blonde, with a purple streak through the bangs. The rest was hidden under a huge headband that blossomed back into thick ropes of faux dreadlocks, mostly blonde and black, but with a number of purple locks mixed in to match her outfit, which was eye-catching, to say the least. She wore no shirt, just a black bra and matching mesh fishnet top with the tiniest of micro skirts and knee-high fuzzy boots matching the purple of her hair and makeup, which would have been gaudy if not for how well it pulled out her striking emerald eyes. Those eyes burned with a fierce intelligence, startling, in fact, for a woman so young. That's the part that had nearly knocked me over, her youth. There was still a roundness to her face. She couldn't have been more than 20 or 21 years old. I observed all of this in seconds. Then I noticed, almost in passing, that she carried a tray of brownies.
"Hello, boys."
Her smile radiated a gleeful mischief, as though she was in on some joke that the rest of us weren't yet privy to, and made her all the more beautiful, if that were even possible. She took a brownie off the stack.
"I always put something in my stomach before I do this. If I eat you on an empty stomach, I'll get heartburn something awful."
She giggled at the comment, smirked, and then added,
"My name's Estella."
What a profoundly odd thing to say, I thought. In fact, it made me quite uncomfortable. If I eat you on an empty stomach, what in the world did that mean? For one frightening moment, my first life self, the one who loved reading Dickens by firelight, the one who walked daily in the woods hand in hand with my brilliant, beautiful wife, the one who knew better than to drive miles and miles into a foreign town to collude with strange people in strange houses to perform unspeakable acts, rushed back into existence. I panicked.
My breathing became sharp and erratic. I stood in a room full of freaks, strangers, all unfazed by each other's stark oddness, the deceptive nature of the creepy little party planner, or the general feeling that the house we stood in was no swinger sanctuary, no open-minded retreat for wealthy aristocrats wanting to steer clear of the public eye. There were no pictures hanging in this room, nor any other signs or clues as to the resident's identity. Who lived here? Who was this woman standing in front of me, 40 years my junior, staring at me with hungry eyes? If I eat you on an empty stomach, I'll get heartburn something awful? What did that mean? Had Samuel been right to caution me against this adventure? Were these people's intentions truly heinous? I nearly bolted for the door, back to the comforts of the civilized world, back to my mundane, boring little teacher life, back to my dear Susanna to give her the proper graveside mourning she deserved. Then I noticed the young lady looking at the large television set behind me. The bangers had gathered around it and were presently stroking half-hard cocks, transfixed on the screen. On it, a woman was in the middle of collecting a dozen sperm deposits in her mouth. As the porno actress swallowed the overflowing stew of DNA in one gulp, our lady, Estella, rubbed her tummy and said,
I love watching movies before I fuck. Gets me super wet.
She giggled. I relaxed, exhaling, letting thoughts of malice and discontent drift from my mind. My second life regained control. There was no threat here. Only colorful people looking to have some unorthodox fun. I returned my focus to my hostess, Estella, and the coming fun we were about to have. She stepped in front of the TV, grinning at all the exposed cocks. I followed, transfixed.
And what are we doing over here, naughty boys?
She said, accentuating her words with mischief, her tone that of mock chaste.
Put those big hard cocks away and enjoy some of my home cooking.
She sat the brownies down on the small coffee table between her and the television. I drank in her curves and scent with hungry abandon, feeling my own dick pulse and grow rigid in my trousers. Standing next to her, I breathed in her scent, the smell of sex and brownies and cotton candy? Yes, it was stronger on her than the flyer, yet still faint. In fact, now that I thought about it, the whole house had that faint, odd smell to it. Big D hopped off a gaudy flowered love seat, breaking my train of thought.
Let me get one or two of those,
he said, scooping up five.
These edibles? I could really use a buzz right now. Bunch of stuck-up motherfuckers in this joint.
Edibles? I asked Vern, who joined Big Daddy at the brownie plate.
Pot brownies,
he said, with a hint of a smirk, obviously enjoying my not-so-subtle naivety.
Of course they are, sweetie,
Estella said.
Those are homegrown Colombian smokeweed brownies, though. I'd only eat one if I were you.
Why? Because I'm small? Bitch, I smoke all day. I'm OG. I don't give a fuck.
He gobbled down four of them right then, as if to prove his point. Maxwell reached up from his spot on the adjacent couch and slapped Big D in the back of his head. Have some respect for the lady.
Fuck you too, bitch,
Big D spat, brownie crumbs raining down on Maxwell's shoes. Who are you calling a bitch, Tiny? Maxwell said, standing and shoving the little man to the floor. The Cum brothers howled with laughter.
Kick him in the dick,
one of them said. Vern got in between them before any real damage was done.
Now, boys,
our hostess said.
Let's save all that sexy testosterone for my tight little asshole, okay?
That shut everyone up with a quickness. She turned and leaned over the TV, giving us all a view of that asshole as her pitiful excuse of a miniskirt slid up, revealing no panties beneath.
Why don't you all introduce yourselves?
We each stepped forward, murmuring our names to her as she led our hands across her tight frame. Even Big D and Maxwell ceased their squabbling while Estella worked her way around our group, groping the bulges in our pants, kissing our necks, and generally arousing the primal urge to fuck in all of us. She was good. This wasn't her first rodeo. Vern reached around and popped a bra strap. Maxwell grabbed two handfuls of her perky B-cup tits. Tweaking the nipples, Big D yanked her skirt down in one motion. She pulled away, teasing us, expertly taunting us.
Let's take this upstairs, boys, and get the real party started,
she said, taking a dainty little bite off a brownie. We were salivating, sexual slaves to our mistress. We were under her control.
And we are we're back from break.
Yep.
This is going to be a short segment because we went over real long talking about gangbangs.
We got a couple minutes. 20 minutes later.
Yeah. So that was Cotton Candy Part 2.
Indeed.
So Mr. Pillinghast has met the little weirdo.
Yes.
Has passed all of his tests. All of his strange tests to become a part of this gangbang. He's been given directions. He's driven up to the weird farmhouse in Hops Hollow. Have you guys figured this out, Jeremy Daniels? Do you realize I've set most of these stories in the town of Hops Hollow? Any strange fiction story that isn't post-apocalyptic or take place on another dimension or take place on another planet takes place in the town of Hops Hollow?
I've noticed that.
This story takes place in the town of Hops Hollow. Hops Hollow is based on a little town near where we grew up, Alton, Illinois. There's a little township outside of Alton, Illinois called Hop Hollow. And it is it's a small little township, and it's also are you aware of the Hop Hollow Trail?
I have never heard of it.
Okay, well, you know where the Blue Pool is off the River Road. Yeah. So Hop Hollow Trail takes you down, you follow this trail down to the Blue Pool.
Ah.
The Blue Pool, you can actually Google this thing on Google Maps. This pool is so weird that if you follow the Mississippi River and the Great River Road alongside the Mississippi River, you can actually see the Blue Pool from Google Maps. The rumors of Blue Pool are many. There's a big cliff that overhangs this big, still... When I say big, it's the size of probably... as big around as two above-ground swimming pools.
Yeah.
It's probably...
almost 20, like a round Olympic-sized pool.
20 to 25 feet from one side to the other. And almost completely circular.
Yeah, a little more than that.
And it is a still water, a body of bright blue water. It's called the Blue Pool. And there's a cliff just above it. And growing up, I heard rumors, stories, urban legends... that couples would commit suicide by jumping off the cliff into the Blue Pool. I heard that the Blue Pool is bottomless, that crane machinery...
Technically it is. Did you hear...
No.
It is like a letter J. It goes down about 75 feet and curves back into the river.
Into the river, right? Well, that's where the water comes from.
Yeah, they thought it was bottomless because they were dropping railroad cars and big machinery in it, and it would... They could never fill it up. They tried to fill it up and fill it up.
Because the stuff was going out into the river.
Eventually, about a mile down the road, barges started hitting the shit they were putting in it, and they figured out, oh, it's like a big J. So
that's the history of the infamous Blue Pool from the Alton area, Alton, Illinois area. And that is where the Hop Hollow Trail is and where I came up with the name for my fictional town. And I set Hops Hollow is basically Alton. It has all of the... and I think I talk about it in this story a little bit? No. Because Pillinghast isn't from Hops Hollow. He just comes from out of town, shows up at the farmhouse. There are, I think, unpublished stories of mine where I've gone into the description of the township, how it used to be, and I basically describe Alton. It used to be a big, bustling barge town. There were lots of wealth was concentrated there at one time in the 1800s. Yes.
I think you may go into a little bit of that.
The Hairy Chicken is based on the Piousaw Bird, which is another urban legend based on off the Great River Road. There's a giant monster dragon painted on the walls, and there's a local Native American myth that this dragon was slayed.
Fairly substantiated myth. Do you hear about the cave they found with hundreds of human skulls that tried to Indian sacrifice, even though they weren't Indians that sacrificed each other? So
yeah, so that was Hairy Chicken. That is in the Hairy Chicken is in the Last Gig collection. What else did I want to talk about? Why did I bring up... Oh, I brought up Hops Hollow because Mr. Pillinghast gets directions.
Mm-hmm.
He drives out to the farmhouse. He meets the other bangers, these eccentric group of fellas.
It's like the usual suspects of gangbang stars. What you would imagine
weird,
if you
thought a lot of weird. There's brothers that are preoccupied. Swedish brothers that are preoccupied with each other's cum distribution.
Yes, there's and the flavor.
There's a little midget black dude with a huge dong. Mm-hmm. A dong completely overcompensating the size of the rest of the size of his body. There's a transgendered gentleman, female to male. Way before this was a trendy thing.
Yeah.
For people who want to call me transphobic or racist or homophobic, I've been writing trans characters in my fiction for fucking years.
Yeah.
Isn't there a big fucking fat guy too?
Yes.
He has a big fat guy that has to sit on a stool.
Yeah.
So I put together a nice little strange group of bangers.
Yes, it is.
And right before the episode ends, they meet the mistress.
Yes.
What is her name? I don't remember what the fuck her name is.
I can't remember.
I don't remember what the fuck her name is. Stella.
There you go.
Her name is Stella. They meet the mistress of the house, Stella, who is dressed bizarrely in a furry costume with fuzzy boots and a weird hat and all of that stuff that we talked about, 666,
mm-hmm.
on last episode in the origin. She appears in the flesh and leads the boys toward their fate.
Yes.
And then next week's
cotton candy.
Next week's episode, we get to find out. We get to the gangbang gang. We get to find out. In week 3 of gangbang week, we get to see the gangbang. We get to find out. Do they get to gangbang? What is in store for them when they get upstairs? Did you have any? You talked last week.
Oh yeah, the midget. Totally just made up, or
the what?
The midget.
The midget? Oh yeah, yeah. No, I
didn't know if there was any inspiration.
No, it's just one of those things where I have so many like useless bits of information in my little memory banks. In the Strangeville of my mind. And one of the things that I've known for no good particular reason is that little people, midgets, dwarves, they have regular sized penises.
I wouldn't even say regular. Almost everyone I've seen in every kind of movie or anything like that, it's always abnormally large. I mean, it's in the 75 percentile.
Well, you're watching, but so do most guys in...
I've seen more casting couch videos with smaller penises than that. It's like the third leg, more or less.
Yeah, and so that was just based on that. I mean, again, I worked in a porn shop for so many years that all of those weird fetishes, there's a little people fetish, there's midget gangbang movies, and they all have regular sized, or like you said, big, and they look really big because of the smallness of the human beings themselves.
There's a regular sized lady. She couldn't get it all down there, and I've seen her get some big ones down there. But...
So, that's all it was based on. It wasn't based on any... Did you think I knew somebody?
I was just kind of curious which of these characters had influences like some of the other ones.
None of these characters... I wrote this years ago. I wrote this like 6-7 years ago, so I'm thinking back now. I don't think any of these characters were based on real life people. I don't think any of them were. These were all fictional creations. A lot of the characters in a lot of my stuff are like
loosely based
on real human beings, or what they call what do they call that when you multiple composite characters, where multiple people, you take the characteristics and personalities of multiple people and condense them all down into one character.
Or amplify, like where they're a little bit like this and you just blow them out of
her. So none of these were based on anybody I knew in real life, and none of them were composite characters of anyone I knew. They were all, even the old man, even Mr. P, he's not based on anybody. This was early on in my fiction career, and I was really excited to write fiction. You know, basing characters or stories on real life events and stuff like that, it's almost like cheating. It's almost like the story's already told for you. This was during this period where I had been so restricted creatively, making movies, because I had to write to my budget, I had to write to my character, my actors, strengths and weaknesses. I had to make the special effects in the, you know what I mean, like within a small budget. When I say small, I mean $20 for an FX budget. So this was in a period where it was such a creative explosion for me, because suddenly anything was possible. No ideas were off limits. I could write about anything I wanted to. So this was hard to write. I remember this took me 4 or 5 months to write this, and it's not all that long. It's not super short either, but it's not. I think this is maybe 18,000 words.
Something.
And most of my longer books are 35 to 40,000. So this is about half of a regular size book for me, and it took me just as long as any of the other fuller length stuff, because everything in it was, every character, everything about this was completely pulled out of my ass. So I had a lot of fun. I think it's really strong, and I remember I surprised a lot of people with it. Because nobody expected. I was known as the fucking, you know, the shock fucking horror comedy fucking no budget douchebag guy. I made sex comedies. I made goofy sophomoric humor, fart jokes, dick jokes. And I came, you know, oh, strange sex. That sounds like something you do.
Juggalo Cheech and Chong.
Yeah, the Juggalo Cheech and Chong. And even the premise of this. Oh, it's a furry gangbang. Oh, furry gangbang. But when people read it, it doesn't read, you know, my style of writing is take an absurd idea and write it with complete sincerity. Mm. And so that's what I did with this. People read this story, they're like, that's fucking good, man. That's fucking good. I was like, you goddamn right, it's good. I wouldn't do it if it wasn't good. I wouldn't have fucking wasted all my time with writing this fucking stuff if I didn't think it was good. If I didn't think I had some game. So that's about it for this week, I think. Yeah. What do you got any other questions or concerns?
No, not really.
All right, episode, Cotton Candy episode 3, gang, next week.
Oh, wait, I do have another question.
What?
16 bars.
No rapping. No rapping from Kevin Strange. You know what we didn't do is we didn't shout out our patrons.
Oh, yeah.
In the month of April yet, so let's, or the month of, we were supposed to do it the last weekend of last month
of March.
We completely skipped a whole another episode, and now it's 2 weeks into the month, and we're going to give a shout out to our patrons just because we missed the month of March. So give me a second here to bring up our Patreon.
But to be fair, in March they did get put in a book.
They did. They got put in I Died in a Bed of Roses, which is available now on Amazon in paperback and Kindle or directly from kevinthestrange.com in a signed and personalized and shipped version for only,
and made even had his penis on.
Only $15. All right, patreon.com/kevinthestrange is where you go to give us money, gang, and I'm going to shout out those who have chosen to do just that how do I bring up the patrons? I know how to do this. Well, we have SL Kosh.
Yes.
He was our $20 donator from January, and we are going to continue to give him shout outs, even though he is no longer a contributor currently. He's going to continue to get a shout out for as long as I can remember to do it, because he's a bad motherfucker. Our newest patron is a cat by the name of Sean Hode, a fellow writer, fellow novelist.
Awesome.
Somehow doesn't hate me. After all the drama.
Somebody to do your introduction.
Yeah, I get Sean Hode to do the introduction to my hardcover Cthulhu book. He is pledging at the $10 level. And he is a bad motherfucker for doing that. That's awesome. We also have our mainstays, Shane Vozar.
Yes.
And Jeremy Maddox.
Yes.
Those are our current patrons, gang.
We appreciate it.
For only $1 a month, you know the drill. You get all these audiobooks in full before they air on the podcast, commercial free. Plus, you get all those Watching with Strangers bonus episodes. We're up to fucking episode 10 of that show. So you're talking 10 bonus episodes of the Cult Movie Review Podcast. Plus, what do we have? We have Humans Under the Bed, Mick Humans, Jorek and the Shog of Steel, Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik, and Cotton Candy. All available for you.
For a dollar.
For a buck, man. I challenge you to pay a buck and listen to all that content within one single month.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to be able to do it. And we will continue week by week, month by month, to add to that giant plate of goodness, of paywall goodness behind the scenes there on the Patreon page. You guys, we can't hook you up any better than this. Yeah. And when I release a new book on the special thanks page, you get a shout out in the all those patrons right there got a shout out in the I Died in a Bed of Roses novel. Yeah. So, I mean,
there might be one coming soon too, so they might want to get in on it if they want to see their name actually in print on a Kevin Strange book.
Yeah, they'll should. Well, if everything goes right, there's going to be at least one new novel in time for Crypticon Kansas City, and possibly two the Jorek collection. We'll see. Don't hold your breath. We'll see. But anyway, gang.
Our editor kind of hates Jorek.
We will catch you next week for more Mr. Pillinghast.
For part three.
More Stella. More Gangbang Crew. Till then.
Keep gangbanging. Our reading.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.